You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Screen Heroes. I am Ray. I am one of your weekly hosts, and I am joined by my other two weekly hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
It's been a little while.
Yeah. Before we get too deep into it, we should probably dive right in that the last Friday, something pretty big happened. I don't know if all our viewers are aware, but the Swamp Thing season finale aired.
And that's true.
It was huge. It's over. And yeah, it was very exciting.
You mean the series finale, right?
Keeping hope alive. I'm keeping hope alive. Yeah. So I figured right off the bat we should lead with that.
Yeah, that's
anything else you guys huge. Want to talk about or that might have happened on Friday?
That's your call.
Derek and I got married.
I mean, you guys have already said it was gonna happen, yeah. So it's not like.
And it did.
Yes.
High five, yo. That was horrible.
What are you talking about? It was good.
You think
yeah,
so?
We're gonna add a cracking whip sound effect.
Oh, I like it. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that happened.
Yeah, we got married. Ryan was there.
Lots of nerd stuff happening there. Like, the whole theme for the wedding was kind of nerdy. And,
it was. It was very nerdy.
Stuff.
Is Disney themed nerdy?
Anything can be nerdy if you're passionate about it. This way, I see it.
When you take it to a fanatic point.
Like, but also having all the groomsmen and ushers wearing Star Trek cufflinks and superhero socks, I think that qualifies as nerdy if the princess thing doesn't.
That's fair. Some of the groomsmen were wearing Star Trek socks.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So. Okay, fair enough. I didn't see
what socks were you wearing?
Captain America, of course.
Nice.
Let's
get real.
I tried my best to pair them up, but between the groomsmen and the ushers and the officiant, there were 12 people I needed to cover, and I only had 8 different superhero socks. So,
yeah, only 8 superheroes have earned socks.
Yeah.
So every other superhero, screw you.
But yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah. So now they're officially married.
We are.
Yeah. The Earth will continue to revolve, and it's going to be great. I hope.
Was it going to stop? I mean,
it's hard to say.
We don't know.
Rachel has a lot of powers that I'm not sure we've seen them all. So
that's fair.
Mostly rainbows just come out of my butt.
Good times.
Flashback to Welcome to Earth 2.
That's true. Good times.
Speaking of Earth 2, Ray and I finally watched the Nazi crossover from the Arrowverse.
We did. We are 2 crossovers behind. And
so you saw the reference to the to Diggle being a lantern then,
yes.
Right?
I must have missed
no,
it.
No, wasn't that the Elseworlds one? We're talking about the Nazi one.
Oh,
like Crisis on...
You guys were 2 seasons behind.
Crossover, Crisis on Earth.
Sorry for spoiling that for you.
No, we knew that.
Okay. Yeah.
I was like, but I didn't remember seeing it in this.
Oh, okay. What did you think of this one?
I mean,
it was a lot of fun.
There's definitely some cheesiness to some of the writing.
But we...
For convenience, but...
Like, first of all, for the CGI budget that we just know CW has, we know that CW is, out of the major networks, it's the lowest funded. It did a really great job. I liked that they just... played it off as Crisis and not as the 4 individual shows. I feel like each of them got a decent amount of screen time. I was a little confused where the rest of the Legends were throughout the rest of the thing, but other than
the Legends always get left out of the crossovers. I know.
They were in primitive times. Remember, they went to a prehistoric time they mentioned.
I just want Brandon Routh and everything, okay?
Yeah,
like, fine, whatever.
You won't like him this next or like in the latest season because his hair is really long and he looks homeless.
I've seen him actually like do photo shoots and cons and stuff, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he finally cut it, but like the whole season was him with really long hair, and I don't know why.
Did they ever figure out what to do with a love interest for him? Because I know they keep trying women, and it's just not working.
No, they found a man, actually. It's not like a gay relationship, but they found like a bromance type situation.
I wouldn't care if it was a gay relationship. Well, yeah, like, I just want his character to find love already.
Well, so speaking of Brandon Routh, if we're going to just come out, we can dive into news here.
Yeah, so let's talk about Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is
this year's seasons. It's really the seasons because it blends into 2020.
It's also, I think, basically the end of Arrow. Yeah. There's like one episode after that of Arrow. So.
This one's pretty big. So it includes Batwoman. So it's actually five series.
And Batman.
Which is going to cross. Well, I meant her show. Oh, the show Batwoman. But that's fair. But yeah, there's a million freaking characters in this crossover, including Brandon Routh reprising Superman. But
well, that we already touched on, because that they talked about at San Diego Comic Con, which was our last episode. So stuff that has come out since, Black Lightning will be finally joining the crossovers. He's been around for 2 years now. This will be his third season, and he is finally getting to be a part of it. So
that makes me very happy.
Same. I think that his show would do really well crossing over, and like a Black Lightning Flash team up just seems way too obvious for me. I don't know why we haven't seen it yet.
Add Captain Marvel wants Team Lightning.
Ooh, I love it. And Thor, like, let's do this.
Look, but we mentioned this when Black Lightning was first coming on the air. It didn't really make any sense to us that it was in yet another Earth.
Yeah.
Because Supergirl, they've had to come up with convenient ways to let her go back and forth, because that doesn't make a lot of sense either. And now you've got Black Lightning in his own. Is Batwoman in her own?
No.
No, that was in the Arrowverse. Like,
she is in the Arrowverse. Yeah. Okay. Just confirming.
Yeah, the Elseworlds crossover actually has them going to Gotham.
Yeah. Okay. They don't cross to a different universe. Arrow is like, or Oliver is like, we need to go to Gotham.
Okay.
Or something like that. And then they just go to Gotham.
And they just go.
That's it.
Like you do.
Yeah.
You can't simply walk into Gotham.
Right. Well, apparently you can.
Yeah.
If you're a vigilante.
All right. So other news. What else do we have going
on? We didn't cover everybody.
They added a lot more.
Lex Luthor from Smallville.
Yeah. John Cryer and Michael Rosenbaum are going to be in.
But
that.
Yeah. He's probably my favorite live action Lex Luthor. No, he's my favorite live action.
He is my favorite live
you
action.
You can't. Like, Gene Hackman and Kevin Spacey were just bad guys. They were like, they were my least
just
favorite.
Because you're a bad guy doesn't mean you're a bad guy.
Zangief.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Did I just take a Disney reference?
You did,
totally did.
In all fairness, Wreck-It Ralph is like supreme Disney It's high quality.
I did see today that we might actually get to see the Diggle Green Lantern that you mentioned earlier. So mm-hmm. That'll be a cool thing they've been building up to.
Well,
for
that exists
years
in the Arrowverse.
For 2 minutes. So.
Yeah.
I mean, somewhere.
I think their thing is, Stephen Amell wants to walk away, and Emily Bett Richards wants to walk away. But the rest of the cast isn't really wanting to. So they're trying to find out new homes, if they can do a spinoff, if Dave Ramsey can carry a show by himself.
Like, I love Diggle, but I don't know that he's a good leading man for a show.
And the problem is, like, all these side characters get swept up to Legends, and that's a problem. I think if you're just going to put everybody in a blender, it's not always going to work out well. So.
Well, and the thing with Diggle is, I mean, if you make him a Green Lantern, then maybe he could hold his own series. But was he going to be another Archer? You know, is he going to be Arrow?
He has worn the Arrow suit. So.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, multiple times. Or is he going to be... oh, man, I'm drawing a blank on his helmet character name.
No, it's not Guardian. Jimmy Olsen. I confuse the two... A head a hammer things.
Yeah, I don't remember what it is either.
See, like, that's a Spartan.
Yeah.
It was like Sentinel.
And just like Emily is Overwatch.
No, she is not.
But like, Spartan's really just it's just a code name
I
for
know.
Him. You know, it's really just him with a helmet, right?
Yeah.
So they got to give him something more, make a character for him.
Well, they do have several other characters that are named DC characters in the team. I mean, they have Black, they have three different Black Canaries at this point, or two right now.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And, Ragman has been a part of the team in the last few episodes, or last few seasons.
I loved Ragman.
He was great. Yeah. Wild Dog.
Right.
You know, so, and they've been doing a lot of future flash forwards, so they could do a future Arrow team, because they've already set up some of the kids of the characters in the future flash forwards,
true.
So...
I mean, they definitely have options. I just don't want them just to throw Diggle in the Arrow suit and just keep making
they
Arrow.
They won't do that.
You know,
they've already announced Arrow's done.
Right.
So I don't. They won't do that. But they there's a rumor going around that there is an unannounced CW superhero show that's going to be taking Arrow's time slot.
It's not Batwoman?
No.
We'll start hearing more about it. And if they're good enough to plug all the leaks, then we won't hear about it until Crisis shows up.
The people on Reddit are going crazy about it being a Batman Beyond with Kevin Conroy as Batman, since he's going to be, we didn't talk about that, but he's going to be Batman in the crossover.
So this is the first time Kevin gets to play a live action Batman. Well, at least Bruce Wayne. I guess we don't know if he'll suit up in Crisis, but because they did specifically say Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I doubt he will. Just like in Titans, they've cast Bruce Wayne, but he's probably never going to suit up.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying that that's necessarily bad, but it would be pretty amazing if they could pull off a live-action Batman Beyond show. My worry would just be budget.
Yeah, because how are they going to be able to make that whole city and all that stuff?
I mean, it was a fairly complex cartoon. And for those who didn't watch it, everything was futuristic because of how far ahead it was. So the Batmobile flew. A lot of the villains were, you know,
I just remember
type things that can,
how complicated the Royal Flush Gang was in version. Like they could fly on their cards like hoverboards, and it was,
would look very cheesy. I don't love the way flying looks already in like Supergirl and some of those shows. So
it's hard to get it right. Yeah, it really is. And Supergirl at least has the advantage of it being so fast, you kind of miss the detail anyway.
Right. But Batman doesn't fly that fast.
Right. And the Royal Flush Gang, the whole point is to show them kind of gliding into, you know, to a scene. So that certainly has the potential to look terrible.
Yeah.
As much as I want to see more Batman Beyond, I loved that show. But
there's still some really cool opportunities without going to the Batman Beyond first.
That one's
just
not
yet.
Even a rumor. That's just like a bunch of people crossing their fingers for
it's what
it
they
on
want.
Reddit.
Yeah.
Gotcha. You know.
Okay, so what would you guys want?
I mean, that's such a hard question because there's a million characters that they could pull from if they wanted to bring in somebody completely new, but they don't ever, they've never done that. All of the shows after Arrow have,
they're backdoor pilots.
Right. So I imagine it'd have to be somebody from an existing show.
So
I probably want Constantine to be back and get his own show because he's fine on Legends. Okay. But either that or like some other member of the Justice League Dark, and then have Constantine be like the lead into that.
Constantine,
and
I guess.
They could rescue Swamp Thing. And
yeah, I don't know
him.
That CW could do Swamp Thing if DCU didn't have the budget for it. But
Constantine seems the most likely, though. He already had a show. It was, the complexity of it is something the CW could handle, right? So actually, that's probably a good possibility.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I mean, without seeing Crisis, there's just all of these rumors on who it could be. Maybe Ramsey is getting his own show, but he won't be the Diggle we know. Maybe it will be a Green Lantern show. I don't know if they could pull that off either, because he has to use constructs and fly around a lot, too. And
it would be the most heavy CGI show.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you don't see, Martian Manhunter a whole lot in his non-human looking form.
If they cut the episode order in half, if it was only 13 episodes and redistribute that budget, then maybe it would work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting point, because I think the CW might even be better off if they did that way and split the shows. Half the shows were fall shows and half the shows were spring shows.
Most of the shows are too long anyway. Like,
I agree.
So much filler.
So much filler.
Especially when the network doesn't have the kind of budget that, you know, Netflix has or the DC Universe has.
And because of it, we get robbed of great storytelling because they have to save their CGI budgets. It's the reason why Grodd and King Shark are never going to be the overarching villains for the entire season, which is a shame.
Yeah, they get a
because,
random episode here and there, and that's about all they're going to get.
Because they're so cool. Like, there's no reason why we couldn't. You cut all the season orders in half, but you keep with the exact same budget, maybe sell similar advertising or split it. Like, maybe you have 9 shows and 3 of them air during the fall, 3 during the spring, 3 during the summer. And
well, if they're going to have 6, yeah. Well, I guess they're only going to have 5 because Arrow's ending.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, if they had 6, they could do 3 and 3 in the first half and second half of the season. You could still have characters pop up on each other's shows. It might even be easier because they're not busy filming their own stuff.
And the crossover ends the season for some shows and begins the season for the other shows. Like,
yep.
I the more I get into binge watching TV, the more I gravitate towards seasons which are 10 episodes or less.
I appreciate, I like for example, The Boys we were just talking about.
Yeah, that has eight episodes.
Eight episodes, and it felt perfectly paced throughout all the episodes. It didn't feel like there was any fluff. It was all what you wanted to see in the story, and that was that. Whereas you compare that to, like, Arrow, and you have 16 episodes in the middle that are just, like, random other subplots thrown in to fluff out the season. And
there's maybe one tiny important story thing in each episode, but you have to dig through everything else. Like, I don't want to watch 45 minutes of fluff and angsty crap to get that one nugget that's going to make me keep going and going.
You could skip like episodes 8 through 18 and probably still not
figure it out.
You wouldn't be that far behind, really.
Well, look at us. We decided we're kind of done with Arrow, so we actually didn't catch up with Arrow to watch Crisis on Earth X. We caught up with all of the other shows, though, to do that. I know exactly what's going on with the characters.
We didn't.
It'll get a little harder this season.
For Elseworlds.
And leading into the Crisis, because Arrow is the linchpin for the whole thing, and there's some stuff that happens towards the end of this season that...
Well, in this one, the only thing that we had to know was that Felicity and Arrow, or Felicity and Ollie, got back together. Like, that was the only thing that we had to know for Crisis on Earth X to make
sense.
They
usurped the same day to get married as Barry and Iris.
Oh, man, that was crap, right?
Oh, yeah,
like, was... Barry and Iris are a lot nicer than I am, I think. You know, like, I'm just saying, like, no offense, if any of our friends had gotten up and be like, hey, can we do this too? Is that cool?
Yeah, can we just, like, come in here and just,
No, man. Get your own.
I would have immediately been like, you can cut me a check for $7,000 right now, and I'll make this happen for you. I do want to deposit the check and see it go through first. But
of course.
That might delay the ceremony.
Just
anyway,
a bit.
What else we got? What other news do we have? Anything else?
Well, I brought up The Boys.
Yes.
I want to talk about that for a second.
It's already has a season two order.
It had a season two order before season one even aired.
Yeah.
It was their advertising is insane. Mm-hmm. It's advertised way more than any Netflix show I've ever seen. At San Diego, it was posters everywhere.
Good Omens was like that too. Amazon Prime's going hard with their original content.
Every YouTube video had an ad for The Boys in front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Screen Junkies and What Culture, two major entertainment sites that
and
are
the
similar to us. Yeah, the
also
Nerdist. They all had The Boys.
Sponsored by The Boys every episode.
So we're only two episodes in. So, like, we can't really spoil much or anything like that. But the production quality is very high. The suits all look really cool. I have one gripe with the show. And that's I feel like they either tried too hard to match DC exactly, or just
am I mistaken? Is it owned by DC? I feel when it came out, it was not. But then I feel like DC bought the label.
So Garth Ennis wrote it, and he notoriously hasn't really worked for DC. So I think he originally designed the characters mocking DC because he was like passed over for jobs.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point, is that it's supposed to be a mirror of the Justice League and be a realistic take on what that would be like
in
our world.
Truth be told, like, when The Boys was written, Justice League was more iconic. Like, Justice League is the ideal superhero team, and, you know, five or six out of the seven, eight main members that we know of have iconic symbolism that you can find all over the world, and every language knows what it means, who it is. So I think the iconography is easier to mimic and mask. And, you know, the only gripe I have is the names are dumb.
The names aren't great, but I mean, there's lots of superheroes that have bad names.
Yeah. I think Aquaman is not exactly like
No, you're totally right. I would have made fun of that if we were kids in the 1940s. I would have been like, that's stupid.
The thing is, for me, it doesn't come off as satire. It just comes off as a ripoff. And I'm not saying that that's going to make the story bad or the actors bad. It just, you could have at least made some of the heroes. Like, it's the straight up original lineup, essentially, right? Like,
yeah, intentionally.
I know,
I don't understand why you would feel that way.
The point of it is to
satire the Justice League.
But it doesn't feel like what's satirical about it?
You're the only person I've talked to that feels that way.
But here's my point.
You haven't watched the whole series, so
no,
you haven't found
haven't
out
watched,
what's satirical
I haven't
about
watched
it.
All eight episodes. I said that up front, right? But it doesn't feel like satire. It just feels like we're going to make the Justice League all assholes.
And tell a whole different story that hasn't been done to try and see what it would be like.
I didn't say the story was a ripoff. I said the characters are. So the thing is the fact that, what's his name? Homelander, is the fact that he is Superman, is that actually relevant? Or is the fact that he's kind of a pompous asshole murderer that's relevant? Because he doesn't seem like a satire take on Superman. He just has the exact same power set and a similar suit as Superman.
I think it's similar to the Watchmen take, like what happens if, you know, this alternate timeline, if superheroes were real, what would they be like? And in Garth Ennis's head, they would be most likely just the same jerks and assholes that we all meet every single day in customer service and in healthcare and in
celebrities
the corporate world.
That are, you know, raping people and molesting children,
like,
and things like that. And
like
it's all
what if
R.
Kelly
by
had superheroes?
Like
and,
I said,
yeah.
The story isn't my issue. My issue is the character design, right? Like, why does it have to be a ripoff of a specific character to tell that story?
That was also like
it gives the person that's viewing it something to they're already familiar with Superman, so then they don't have to have a huge backstory on the character to be able to go, okay, I know the story of this guy. Basically, we know what this guy can do. He's obviously Superman. They can't use Superman because
I know they can't use Superman. But even like Watchmen, for example, like the characters, like there's some that have some crossover, but most of the Watchmen characters are fairly unique from DC main lineup characters.
Right.
But you've got Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Stargirl, and the Invisible Man. Who else is in there?
Oh, Lamplighter.
Lamplighter is basically Green Lantern.
Black Noir.
And
Batman.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Is he, though?
I mean, in the first two episodes, he's a dude that wears all black and has tactical gear.
That's it.
I know, but like,
yeah, my point, that's basically all he is through the whole series, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, if that was the only thing, like Owlman, right? Like, you can have some similarity.
Night Owl,
thank you.
No, Owlman is Crisis on, you know.
Oh, right, yeah, he's from the
other Earth. Owlman exists, too.
Yeah, he's from the other Earth.
Owlman, yeah.
See?
Not Watchmen, though.
Yeah, so my point, though, is that, like, some of them crossing over is one thing. That kind of helps ground it to something familiar. But this is, like, it's exactly seven characters, right? They call themselves the Seven. Like, it just feels like a ripoff, not satire.
I mean, the Authority did the exact same thing, and then DC bought them.
There's been a lot of stories that have done that thing.
Midnighter,
I mean, if you look
at
Marvel
Apollo
versus DC, a lot of those characters are pretty much the same character with a different name.
You're right, but I don't know that anybody's ever done a straight-up lineup of so many characters straight lifted. Like,
maybe
it just
not.
Feels like too much. It just feels like
I'm
too
sorry
much.
You feel that way. I hope that doesn't taint your enjoyment of the show, but I don't think we should spend too much more time on that.
That's fine.
The show is very good story-wise, if you can get past that.
Oh, yeah, and A-Train's the Flash. There we go. That was the guy I was missing.
Yeah. Yeah. But what would they be like if the world were real? And that's the part that I gravitate towards more than focusing on that. And it works for the show. It's like Watchmen, like you said, except that it's more in a modern time.
Yeah, it's similar to Watchmen. It's similar to Kick-Ass. It has the same hardcore grit feeling to it. The only thing that I'm really looking forward to, because this is now the third property that's like that, is I kind of want to see it from a female perspective. You know, we haven't gotten the what if superheroes were real with a woman writing. And I think that might change things.
I think as you go through, you haven't read the comics for The Boys?
I read Kick-Ass and I read Watchmen. I did not read The Boys.
Okay. What's her name? Starlight? Is that
Starlight,
what it is?
Yeah.
She's like the main character.
Yeah.
And other than The Boys, right?
Yeah.
There's a good female presence
right,
in the show,
of course,
at the very least. If I know it wasn't written by a female, but it is nice that there is a strong female presence
right
away. And even the queen character,
Queen Maeve,
Maeve, she's got a pretty good story. You don't get a ton of it, but
the women don't have like raw deals, and they're not portrayed.
They're not
poorly.
Nearly as dickish as the guys.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
They're not portrayed poorly. So there's a huge difference in the way the sexes perceive the world. So that, like, I am interested in multiple takes on this, because what if superpowers were real? And it tends to only explore the bad stuff, like how powers would be abused and how they would be manipulated and things like that. So it's just, it would be interesting to know what that other perspective is.
So. What did you think of the assault in the first episode? We had talked about
that. That was disappointing, and it wasn't
disappointing in terms of the actions of the characters, or disappointing in terms of the way it was done.
It was definitely triggering. Just from a personal perspective, I've been coerced into sexual acts before, so it could have been triggering. It was not, so at least film cinematography wise, it was,
I think they handled it in a way to try and prevent that.
I just I have to watch more, because honestly I thoroughly hate when assault and rape have to occur to a character for it to be a motivation. I don't think it's necessary.
There is a payoff.
I'm good with that. Like, just in the second episode, she tells him off, and that was a decent amount right then and there. Like, just because sometimes it's easier to throw a fist than it is to tell somebody off. So the verbal confrontation was satisfying in itself. So far I'm happy with the storytelling around it, but it's never good to see that stuff.
No. And it's much handled much differently in the show than it is in terms of like the actual act in the comics was much worse.
Oh, of course.
It was all of the seven basically. So yeah, it was not good, but they definitely, I think the way they toned it down and saying that this show is toned down from the comic books is kind of crazy once you've watched the whole show, because
considering
it's
how many C words get thrown around.
Oh, yeah. They don't hold back.
Yeah.
I like that. I actually like this show better than I like Doom Patrol, because Doom Patrol for me felt like it was coated in kind of like a weird layer of teen angst, like rock star, teen angst, wannabe rebel type stuff. And I love Doom Patrol, but this show is like that, but doesn't have the teen angst.
Well, see, for me, Doom Patrol feels like, given the appropriate budget, could have been a CW show.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, The Boys is a Netflix show. It's an HBO show.
It's absolutely a streaming show.
Right? Yeah. It's more like Titans than Doom Patrol. Right. You know, not that that's fair. I mean, it certainly seems better
definitely agree.
Than Titans. But
but Doom Patrol also had some filler in there, too. And The Boys did not have that. So when I directly compare them, I would watch The Boys again before I watch Doom Patrol again, personally.
Wow.
It's interesting. Fair enough.
Anyway, we talked a lot about that.
Oh, well, the one thing I do want to throw in there is hearing Simon Pegg with an English, American
weird,
accent
right?
is messed up. So.
Yeah.
But he's great, as always.
Yeah.
I just kept sitting there. I was like, I don't like it. No, it's weird because we just watched the entire Cornetto trilogy yesterday.
That's so how, it was fresh.
Yeah,
it was
glorious. Yeah, that's how we spent our honeymoon, guys. Cornetto trilogy, right?
I mean, you could have cut out.
I'm really upset we did it. Like,
that's her favorite one.
Is it really?
Yeah.
We need to have a whole discussion on just that trilogy, though.
Ooh.
That's my
trilogy
least
episode?
Favorite one by a lot.
Oh man. Yeah. So your favorite, Shaun of the Dead?
No, my favorite is
Hot Fuzz. Okay, so you're both Hot Fuzz, and I'm
yes
at World's End. Okay.
Did you ever fire your gun in the air while sealing off?
We definitely need to schedule
the greater good. Yeah, I'm just upset that we didn't have ice cream during it.
I know.
Oh, we have to have ice cream sandwiches when we review it.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't do a review and we should just do a discussion.
We could do that. Yeah.
Yes.
I guess since we brought that up, apparently Amazon bought the rights to a Simon Pegg, Nick Frost ghost hunting show.
I really hope it's like a parody of Ghostbusters. That would be amazing.
I really hope that it's a parody of like all those ghost shows.
That would be okay too. Like, I'd really be. There's nothing I can do that's going to make me unhappy with this show.
Well, here's my only part where I'm nervous. I do not think Edgar Wright is involved.
I'm okay with that.
And, well, the three of them together make very special stuff. Right, the Cornetto trilogy for me is absolutely incredible. And while I can rank the films, I love all three of them. And Paul, for example, where Edgar Wright was not involved, but Simon Pegg and Nick Frost were, it just doesn't reach that type of caliber.
But your problems with Paul were Kristen Wiig and Seth Rogen. They were not
That's
Edgar Wright and Nick Frost. So I feel like You just need to wait.
I mean, I was fine with Paul.
Well, you're right. Also, the way he shoots, the way the cinematography is handled and his stuff is probably my favorite.
I'm not gonna argue with you about how I love Edgar Wright, but I think that it's unfair to say that or to think that they can only do a good show if Edgar Wright is involved.
No, I don't mean that.
I mean, Edgar Wright wasn't directly involved in Spaced.
Yeah. Right, but again, I've never seen Spaced, so I can't voice an opinion on that.
Yeah,
so.
You can't.
Nobody's perfect.
It's true.
Speaking of which, guys, so tonight our main topic is The Goonies, and it was chosen because it was one of the movies Derek never saw. So we're going to take a very small break and then be right back to discuss The Goonies.
Hey, why play video games when you could watch people play video games? Why watch people play video games when you could listen to people talk about video games? Come rest your eyes and hands with the Gamer Heroes podcast. We'll cover the latest news in games, previews, reviews, and more coming your way every Wednesday morning. Come check us out as part of the Heroes Podcast Network at heroespodcasts.com or find us on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, or, you know, other podcast places. Give us a listen to help you get through your busy day or even just forget you left it playing in your headphones. We're cool with that too.
All right, guys, we are back to discuss the 1985 classic Richard Donner movie, The Goonies. Now, this was a Steven Spielberg screenplay, executive produced by Steven Spielberg, directed by Richard Donner, stars Josh Brolin and Sean Astin, Corey Feldman, Martha Plimpton, all before they were like super famous. Probably not really for Corey Feldman. He was like the 80s star and he had already done a few things. He would go on to do a few more things. So, but everybody else was pretty much unknown at the time. And now they've all gone on to do really cool things. First and foremost, Derek.
Hi.
How was your experience watching The Goonies for the first time?
So I just want to preface this with, it's not that I never wanted to watch it. It's that everybody had already seen it and nobody wanted to watch it with me.
You had the wrong friends.
Derek doesn't watch movies by himself, usually.
Not really, no. Really, Star Trek's like the only thing. That and Red vs. Blue are the only things I watched like alone. So that's why
I want you to know at any point during our friendship, if you had said, you want to come over and watch The Goonies? I would have said yes.
Fair enough.
You were with the wrong friends your whole life.
I agree. Like,
jeez.
Should get new friends.
That's what I'm saying.
But it was a lot of fun. It was great seeing this particular cast like at a very young age, because this is the youngest I had seen probably
everybody.
Any of these guys, right? I'm trying to think if there's anybody in this that I might have seen at a younger age. And you know, like I think the first Sean Astin movie I ever saw was Rudy, and so he was obviously older in that.
Significantly,
And so that was really fun. I really liked that. It was super 80s. I mean, it just felt like that era of film, which if people who listen to the show know, like 80s music is some of my favorite, and technology and movies and just that whole era is just awesome for me. So it was fun.
Could you imagine what it would have been like to see that in the 80s when it came out?
I mean, so from the way it was, like the way it's shot, the kind of story that it is, it's very much Hook-like, you know?
Yes.
Obviously, it
right?
came out before Hook.
Yeah, I know. Yes. But I'm just like, so I imagine I would have felt a similar way to when I saw Hook the first time. And Hook, of course, is one of my favorite movies.
I worry that it would reasons. Be a little tainted for you. It's like whenever you go back and watch something but that did something really amazing, but then it's been done several times since then.
And it has.
Then I was worried that maybe it wouldn't be as special for you because you'd seen it almost everything that movie did that was special before, other than maybe the cast.
I mean, the only downside to it is some of it's a little rushed because of just the era that the movie was made in, right? So, like, they have to rush through and explain, you know, why these guys are all friends together and why there's all this, like, why they have to leave. And it's just, I feel like if it had been made today, they would have been given more time to flesh some of that out, right? But, I mean, it has some 80s tropes, like the old white corporate guy is the bad guy, the real bad guy, right? Like, you've got the criminals. I'm drawing a blank on the family's name.
The Fratellis.
Fratellis, thank you. You've got the Fratellis, but they're not the real bad guys. The real bad guys are the corporate owners who want to turn everything into a golf course. You know, kind of like Ghostbusters, right? Yeah. Gozer's not the real bad guy. It's no, really
Walter Peck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Walter Peck was just doing his job.
Yeah, well, he could have been nicer about it.
Okay, Rachel, I have a question for you. What can you go through the sequence of what Derek's face looked like when Sloth ripped his shirt off and had a Superman shirt and then the Superman theme played?
So
No. I didn't ask you, Derek.
You're right.
Give Rachel a chance to talk.
Okay. I think you have to ask Derek because I was not watching him. I was watching the movie.
No. See, when I watch a movie that somebody hasn't seen for the first time, half of it for me is watching the reactions to the best parts of the movie.
I will say that one of the first things Ryan and I ever did together as friends were we went to go watch Ghostbusters in theaters, and I sat two rows back from him, and I did not watch the movie. I watched Ryan, and it looked like he was watching it for the first time. Like he was reacting like he had never seen it before.
It was only my second time seeing it on the big screen, so you know,
I've still never had a chance to do that. It bums me out.
I'm sorry.
Well, in all fairness, looking back, you know,
it was
Ryan and I.
There.
Ryan and I were both with people that we're no longer with, and you know, like he was also in full cosplay gear. He was probably very high. It was like a night in August,
something like that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was an intense, sweaty night, yeah.
So that scene in particular. So one of the downsides to waiting this long to see it is there are certain aspects of the movie that I was aware of.
Right.
Right.
The Sloth wearing a Superman shirt was one of them.
Yeah, like because I've seen that image, right? That imagery has been used
every
before.
Action figure of Sloth or whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's always...
like, I knew that was going to happen at some point.
You didn't know the theme was going to play?
No, I didn't know the theme was going to play. I didn't know the exact context. Like, I had some guesses and things like
okay.
that.
Okay, so what was it? How was that moment for
you?
Oh,
it's a great scene, right? The pirate ship is awesome, and you know, he's doing the thing that he watched in the movie where he cuts down the sail and everything, and it's just... It's fun. It's shot in a way that movies are no longer made.
Well, right? It's like Spielberg used Richard Donner's expertise, because at this point, Richard Donner had been making movies longer than Spielberg had, and he was on set probably every day, and he reused this stuff for Hook later on, especially everything on the ship. Absolutely. All the fighting choreography. It was Goonies amped up to 11, so it was definitely, you know, the two of them working off of each other.
And you know, I didn't realize that it was a Donner film until we watched it, right? And that was really kind of cool because I didn't know the Superman connection that I had seen in pop culture all those years. I like the way movies used to be filmed. Like now everything's done, you know, in these green screen studios, right? Like there was that behind the scenes photo that was released recently of I guess it's Infinity War, right? Where the hero, they're running, when the running scene, and they're like, they're all on individual treadmills and it's just green behind them. And like, they're not even running together.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. There's just something a little sad about that, I think.
Yeah, Chunk was really falling the whole time, and, you know, everything was...
Well, like the slide scene, for example. Like, even in the credits, they had to thank somebody for supplying the slide. It was an actual slide that they had to build and dress up, and there was no CGI used, and they're actually sliding. Now, there's no real danger, of course, right? But they're also not... totally in a studio somewhere with just green all around them. They're actually sliding through a fake cave, and it's just, I like it. It's real. The pirate ship was built. Somebody had to build those sets, and it was actually there. And all of the traps and stuff are really fun, and they're very, you know, Indiana Jones-esque, of course, which is on purpose. And
so Derek is definitely Data, right?
Oh god, I've never seen Derek go balls to the wall on that kind
of
stuff.
I just feel like he's tries to be the most technologically advanced of all of us. And
see, yeah. I'm more worried on Mikey, because I always wanted to like do these crazy things and nobody else ever wanted to. So I kind of felt like that.
That's
a little
fair.
Bit where like
I used to be Mouth and now I've grown into Chunk. So like,
whoa. At least you're not Sloth, okay? For real.
Sloth was very useful, okay? Sloth was a good person and very useful.
He has his moments.
So, I mean, we kind of are all over the place.
Yeah, we are,
one,
sorry.
So.
Well, I'm assuming that our audience has seen this. You
yeah,
know, so
I don't
we're
think
not really
we need to approach
reviewing
it, like a review.
It. We're just That's discussing fair. It.
So, I mean, my favorite parts are, of course, once they actually start the journey and they get to the closed down restaurant. From that point forward, the movie is much better than the I guess the first act.
They had to establish characters and everything like that first.
They did. And there's some great stuff in those early moments.
Trouble.
Nah, that doesn't hold up well. I think that might be the only real moment that doesn't hold up too well.
The Rube Goldberg doorbell is pretty great.
Yeah, but the fence is like 2 feet tall, so he could have like just
nobody just like hops over it. But
I'm also not sure how reusable that device is in this situation.
That's true. Just left the sprinklers like running. Yeah, you know, it's like
it does require that a chicken hatches an egg every time, and you know that's just not how biology works, guys. Like they don't do that.
They also have to pop a balloon, so that's
somebody has to go out there and blow up a balloon every time,
right? So there's a lot of things that have to happen that probably aren't reusable, but I do like when Data goes through the screen door, and then later Chunk just walks through the door. Right?
But everybody else opened it, and Chunk just walked through.
Part of me wonders if that might not have been scripted. Like the door may have, someone didn't hold the door for him, and he just walked through it because he.
Well, they show earlier that they didn't. There's one other scene where they didn't hold the door for him, and it closed in his face, and then he had to open it himself. So I think that was planned.
Okay.
But, so, what are you happy about that things have changed in cinematography sense or in movie sense? Like
less ads.
I don't think that's true though. I think we get just as many, if not more now. Because think about like in Endgame, every time you know Tony drives up in a car or anybody drives up in a car.
I guess it was just less subtle,
you know?
in the 80s. Like when people complained about the advertising in Stranger Things, I thought that was actually very true to the era. This movie reminded me of that. There's like one scene where you get six different advertisements happening in about 2 minutes.
Pepsi is everywhere.
I just don't think it's changed. I just think maybe we don't notice it as much because the logos match what we're used to seeing now. But when you go and watch the Goonies, it's the old logos. And so you're like, oh man, I forgot when, you know, I don't know, the Pizza Hut box looked like that.
Yeah, whatever, when they're all holding up Pizza Hut boxes. Yeah.
You know, like it's just, that's more noticeable now because you haven't seen that logo since you were a kid. Right.
Right.
I don't think product placement is any different today.
It's just different. People are more selective about what's in there. They're not like, oh, I have to get Doritos in the shot. They're like, no, I have to get Sony and Toshiba in the shot. And, you know,
they'll use a phone, but it's not like showing the Sony symbol. It's just you see the phone. And if you're a phone person, then you know that that's a particular phone.
And maybe that's the way it is now. Is just the designs are more
slightly more subtle.
Yeah, maybe that's the case.
But I mean, in Captain America: The First Avenger, they were able to get a ton of product placement just in the Times Square scene. And they use the moments they have. It's maybe they're a little bit better at blending in. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it depends on the film. You know, a thing like Captain America is mostly a period piece, so it's a lot harder to do that during a World War II movie, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like the more modern films, and maybe it's the Iron Man ones, maybe because of...
Burger King.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like...
I need a Burger King burger. Yeah, like that was pretty bad.
Yeah. So, that's all. Yeah.
I feel like characters are slightly less tropey, or people try to make them less obvious. You know, the fat kid... wanting food, the smart Asian kid, the mouthy kid whose literal name is Mouth, and
the names are not particularly clever in this.
No.
Data,
Chunk, Mouth, and Mikey, like,
but those are all most of those are nicknames, so right, like, yeah, I can buy that. Kids aren't exactly clever in real life. They're more clever now probably than they were in the 80s, but
I mean, and that's fair. I guess I feel like we still have the same kinds of tropes today. Maybe they're just hidden better because the movies are more spectacle, right? Because if this movie was made today, you wouldn't have just had a pirate ship in a cave. There would have been some little gimmick to it that would have been some ridiculous CGI nonsense.
Oh, sure.
You know, that would have
distracted. Well, we would have actually gotten to see the octopus. It wouldn't have been cut.
Right.
So do you want to talk about that bit? Because you know some.
I had to point it out to you because, like, at the very end, they're interviewed by the news, and
Data says something about the octopus was the scariest part or something like that. Yeah.
And the octopus, it was built, it was shot, it was cut for some reason. Like, I never got Spielberg or Donner's reason why. Probably timing. Like,
probably. Movies weren't as long back then as they are now.
They tried to stick to the 90 minutes.
Yeah, it was almost 2 hours in the 80s.
Hour and 54 minutes for back then. That's a big deal if you weren't like Aliens and Terminator,
right?
Yeah,
you know? This is a kids movie for all intents and purposes, you know.
So. But there is one shot where you can see a ginormous pinkish purplish body in the background, and I assume that was the octopus prop that was built. So never know, but it's kind of like behind the pirate ship.
And so for me, for someone who didn't know that story and didn't, it's the first time watching, I didn't catch anything in the background. I thought the kids were just embellishing the story, you know, and it plays off that way fine. So it's, maybe that's why they kept that line in, because it just felt like kids embellishing the story, which plays into why the cop originally didn't want to believe anybody, because they've lied so many times about nonsense.
This movie did kind of set up the inept robber trope that has followed through like Home Alone movies and stuff like that, where they're just adults that are so grossly inept at everything.
Home Alone kind of perfected it, man.
Like,
they did. They did handle it better than this movie. Obviously, this movie was the first one that I can think of that I did something like that. I mean, they were like, when she's pointing the gun at him at Data on the ship, and then he shoots the suction cup, and somehow the gun goes like this before, so that it can stick to it. You know, it's like, okay, they're just so inept. And I guess that's the same reason that they do a lot of other inept type of characters in movies, but to make the kids feel better about, you know, how intelligent they are versus the adults, and make the adults look dumb so that the kids can look smarter.
Well, in a lot of cases, it's a budget thing, right? Like, Data's gadgets were super cool, but they were also super low tech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was the 80s, so they were
They were low tech for the 80s. Though. Think about it. He had the little chomping mouth toy. Right, and he had the suction cup thing. He wasn't
and the
using,
oils
like,
shooting out of his shoes.
That was cool. The slick shoes was cool. That's probably his best gadget, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right, because he's basically a low budget Inspector Gadget.
Yeah,
that's really what he is. Mm-hmm. You know, and
which was popular around this time. So, and his dad was also the same way.
That seems super cute.
Yeah,
you know,
you can't hug a photograph.
Well, that line's a little cheesy, but when his dad
everything in the
80s tries to do
cheesy.
The camera thing and everything, and you can kind of see the connection. That's really cute.
Yeah.
But you also have like there's a lot of stereotypes, and you have the overprotective mother with the kid with asthma, right? He can't go outside, he's gonna die, like nonsense. That's obviously not true.
The overprotective brother, you know.
I don't know, that one seemed okay. He didn't really seem
chasing him down on a little kid's bike.
Well,
like,
that seems ridiculous.
Yeah,
he's going 45 miles per hour on that thing. It's like totally ridiculous. But you know, what are you gonna do?
It was something.
The dynamics of the older kids was very weird and confusing, and I feel like there was some story that was cut at some point
probably
to help make that make more sense, you know. But like Andy was with who's the other guy, the guy who was driving the car.
I can't remember his name.
But anyway, she's they're with him in his car.
Todd,
thank you. But she's got
the name of every jerk in the 80s, basically.
I mean, yeah, exactly. She's got the date with Brand and everything. So like, was she also dating Todd? Did they have a thing? Cause she had his jacket later. Right. Cause she sent it up to him in the well. So like, we don't know anything about that backstory, but it's kind of confusing.
I got nothing for you there. Like, I feel like Todd existed just to have like the fun toilet scene happen to somebody later. And it gives you a little bit of a payoff.
So I didn't actually realize that was Todd.
Yes, Todd is the one who gets all the pressure from the toilet, hits the ceiling, and then falls down and yells, "Dad!"
See, so like they had shown him so little in the movie, I actually thought that was just another random guy. Because they showed some other random people at like the country club and stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that this was a character we knew, which
right.
is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So that I guess that's something.
And that's why he's
there.
That's why he's there at the end, where he's like, "Sign the papers. My dad is here." Like,
oh, see, I didn't realize that was the same guy either. Yeah. So, so, like, they did a really poor job of establishing Todd. So.
Do you think the sloth prosthetics held up?
I think they looked fine. You know, I think that obviously they'd be different today. They'd probably.
In 1080, it looks a lot different. Like when I was looking at it, it still looks really good, but like the skin texturing you can tell is different, and the way it like glistens is weird. But
well, I mean, American Horror Story has done that same look on a few of the characters.
Yeah, it's been used on purpose.
Yeah.
Certainly, it was a little weird in this circumstance, but I thought it still looked really good considering when this movie was made.
I mean, it certainly holds up better.
The ears moving and everything, all that was great.
That couldn't have been easy.
No, that's a lot of work in those.
Mm-hmm. I was worried that going back and watching this, you know, we handled people who have disabilities in such a different manner now, and it's so much better because we don't talk down to them, like, you know, at least we try not to in art. And I was worried really that didn't. Yeah, I was worried that going back and watching this, I was going to find something problematic with the Sloth character. And the relationship between him and Chunk is so good. It's so equal and fond, and Chunk never at one point thinks of him as
lesser.
Yeah. Like his family does. And, you know, Sloth serves as a reason to really hate the Fratellis, because you're like, are you kidding me? Like,
you... Yeah, you dropped him on his head a bunch of times and caused him to be this way. And
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, the Fratellis, the rest of the Fratellis anyway, are probably the worst part of the movie. You know, because of some of the stuff that you were mentioning, like, they're very dumb. They're really incompetent, but they're also supposedly like super scary and dangerous.
Yeah, they were able to escape from jail and like plan this whole, you know,
which is a shame
because
the escape is actually pretty clever.
Yeah.
Like when you see, and that's how the movie starts, right? So like, you know, he pretend hangs himself and uses the pipe so he's not actually caught. Like, that was super clever. And the ring of fire. Like, so I'm thinking, like, we've got some really dangerous bad guys. These kids are going to somehow have to like escape or outthink or something, right? And they just get progressively dumber as the movie goes on.
By the end, they're like literally like hitting each other with swords. And it's like, okay, guys, what's going on here?
There's no way a movie nowadays would let a kid go on for 20 minutes. I assume it was about 20 minutes by the way they were all... By the way, the scene was.
The torture scene, so to speak.
And Chunk is just crying and admitting all the like minor horrible kid things that he's done. And I'm like... There's no way three adults would sit around and listen to all of it. Yeah. Like, as soon as it was not relevant, they would stop him. Like, I'm not saying they would have gone through and blended his hand off, but that scene would have been cut for being ridiculous, like irrelevant.
Yeah, the Fratellis, that's kind of the bad stuff. Like, some of the fight choreography towards the end on the boat is just...
Calling it fight choreography is being very generous.
Yeah. It is.
It's when you realize, like, they had one take and they didn't have money to do a second take, right? Kind of problem, which that is less of a problem now because it's all digital and data is cheaper. But, yeah, like, there's a scene, I think it's Brand who... when Brand jumps off to save Andy, he runs right past the mom and easily could have shoved her in the water. And somehow, like... The initial shot, the setup shot, makes it look like he's going to just, like,
it looks like he hits into her. Yeah.
And then they cut to the wide shot, and he just, like, totally misses her, right? Like, little things like that where maybe the continuity is a little off.
Yeah.
But it was a kid's movie, so they probably weren't taking it as seriously, yeah. Right? Because people also weren't watching movies as critically back then. In 1985, like...
There wasn't review podcasts on every single podcast station. There was Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was basically it, right? You had your newspaper review and, you know, that of people they had interviewed when they came out of the movie, and that was it. Mm-hmm. There was no streaming. People were not rewatching things 1,000 times and scanning back and forth looking
for
little details.
They weren't doing test audiences either.
Oh, that's interesting. Test
audiences and focus groups started happening around the late 90s.
Hmm. There you go. So it's a very different era for when movies were made. So you only had a group of a dozen or so people who are editing this film down and rewatching it, and then they just would release it. You know, that's why the original Star Wars had a boot, an actual boot floating in space, because the green screen was messed up and nobody caught it.
Yeah.
You know, today that wouldn't fly. Could you imagine if something like that had happened in a Marvel movie? You know, we'd never hear the end of it. You know?
Well, like,
it'd be like a coffee cup on the set of Game of Thrones.
Thank you. Yes, exactly like that. It would be massive news that everybody would talk about for days, right? When it was just a simple editing problem, right? Yeah, that's a great example.
So Sean Astin, over the years, has been pushing for a sequel to this movie where all the kids are now adults and their kids go on an adventure similar. How would you feel if that movie was announced?
I mean, it's fine. I think it would actually be far more interesting if it wasn't their kids that went on the adventure, but they had to, kind of like in It, where the older selves have to go back. And
they
do
all
something.
Have crippling back problems, yeah. So they can't go down a slide. And like the that asthma is so bad now that he wears the CPAP mask.
But think about it though. Think about the fun you could have with like middle aged guys bumbling around in a cave or something like that. You could still make it fun and lighthearted, but have some stakes.
I picture it would be kind of like City Slickers, where you know Billy Crystal is a really bad cowboy rancher whole time, and he's complaining about his back on this horse, and it could be really funny. But the problem is the audiences have changed so much, so they would, if they go with the adults, they would make it mature, and I think it should stay
a
PG.
A little bit of the magic that was in the first one, I think.
But if they make it for kids, it'd be all about upping the stakes, like how much danger can we put these kids in and it still be, you know, not life-threatening. So I actually think that they'd screw it up both ways.
I think they need to come up with a way to pass the torch somehow in the movie, right? Where there are kids and the kids are going to get the third film on their own, but the parents have to be involved somehow, because that's how you grab our generation, right? The generations that grew up with the movie and the new kids.
That's basically my idea for Ghostbusters, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do the same kind of thing, right? Yeah. Like, you know, maybe...
The difference is Ghostbusters is a franchise and they want to keep making content. Exactly.
Really. But there's ways you could expand on it though, right? Yeah. Where, you
know, Goonies verse.
Not the Goonies verse, right? But like you could have a situation where the kids, you know, they find some stuff boxed up and they go on a similar adventure, or and then the parents have to rescue them, or vice versa. Maybe the parents are the ones who get themselves stuck and the smarter kids have to save their parents. Like, that's a thing that used to happen in 90s films. You know, there's some of that we've lost over the years with movies getting just a little too serious for their own good sometimes.
Well, movies nowadays are on much bigger scales. Everything has to be on a crisis scale, and it doesn't. It really doesn't.
But here's where there might be some hope. Disney announced today that they want to reboot Home Alone. Now, if they really want to reboot Home Alone and keep it Home Alone, that's a small-scale movie.
Yeah, it's about a small, silly home invasion.
Now, if they can pull that off...
I hate saying that I just said those words. I hate that.
But think about it. If they could pull that off and they do it well and people like it, there's no reason they couldn't start that trend back up. I think the fact that everything has to be world-ending is disappointing, and it's gotten away from us. You look at a franchise like the Fast and the Furious franchise, like where it started was these guys were trying to steal a truck of TV VCR combo devices to Hobbs and Shaw, where there's a virus that's going to wipe out half the population or whatever. Like, these are the same characters doing the same stuff. Like, these were car drive, like racers, like street racers, right? Like, it doesn't have to be that way. You can make small scale stuff and still have a fun movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm upset that like the only live action kids movie I can think of currently is the Dora the Explorer one, and it's still a huge scale thing. Like, she travels from America to South America, excuse me, the US to South America, and goes on like this magical, mystical adventure, and like, don't get me wrong, that's kind of the plot of the show, but it's still on a much bigger scale. Like, we don't really need that, though. Like, Dora the Explorer just did tiny things. And
it's movies like The Goonies and Sandlot, those types of stories that made good movies 20, 30 years ago. There's no reason they wouldn't still be good today. They're just, those movies aren't going to make $1 billion. Right. And if a studio looks at you and says, well, we're only going to make your movie if you can make us $1 billion, then all you're going to get are these massive, ridiculous, stupid blockbuster type things. You know, and they're not all bad, of course. Like, Endgame was fantastic. But let's face it, the Fast and Furious movies 7 on are pretty freaking stupid. Right. But they make $1 billion. So no one's complaining.
Right.
You know, so it almost makes me a little sad that a movie like this just isn't made anymore.
So, in regards to that, what are the big promotions or the things that the director and the stars of Shazam were saying was that it felt like an 80s movie like The Goonies. One, that was a movie that they used as an example a lot. Do you agree that Shazam felt like an Amblin movie from the 80s or 90s?
I can see the influence.
It's certainly on the smaller scale of superhero films, you know, kind of more like the first Ant-Man, right? Where there doesn't feel like there's world impending doom, but I guess, I mean, there could have been. The seven deadly sins could, you know, wreak a lot of havoc outside of Philadelphia. So, you know, there was still some higher stakes, I think. Because, like, you look at, like, the Goonies, what's the stakes? Well, the stakes are that some bad guys get away with a bunch of gold and some families lose their homes, right? And that all sucks. That sucks. It's terrible. But nobody's dying, right? Worlds aren't ending. Cities aren't crumbling. You know, it's just kind of a sad friend film. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I can't think of the last movie I saw that had that type of stakes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe It is not a terrible comparison because the It movies all take place in one small city, town,
yeah.
Right? It only affects that town. If you don't ever go
to Derry, Maine,
then you're fine, yeah. Right? Like that, then Pennywise will never touch you, will never influence you.
Until you read
way.
The books and yeah. find out wow. that all of it is done by a giant floating space turtle.
right. But I mean, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe the fact that it has been successful and Chapter 2, if it is as successful as it's looking like it'll be, maybe that will show studios that you can make these smaller scale films. As long as the writing is good and the actors are good, people will come and see your movies.
Well, but the Stranger Things fit into your scale then? Because, I mean, most of that took place in a small town.
Yeah, but you also get the feeling, though, that if the kids don't stop these monsters, then they're just going to run havoc all over our world, right? Because, I mean, they're pretty powerful creatures, especially...
The Demogorgons, the Mind Flayer, Demodogs, they're all pretty frightening. And if the kids didn't stop them, they would continue to... breach out of Hawkins. So
especially you know. When you look at season 3 and you've got like Russia involved in Russia halfway across the world trying to like open up these rifts and stuff.
Yeah, but still the story was in their city.
Yeah.
Even though it was Russians in their city, but
I think season 1 felt smaller.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. Cuz it's just this one town, this one research facility with this handful of people, but each season it seemed like got a little bigger.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it is a good example, I think. Other than the space turtle, which may or may not be in the second movie. We don't know.
And Stranger Things' biggest pulls are easily the Goonies and It.
Yeah.
So I just, yeah, there's a little bit of sadness of that these types of movies are just not made much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're fun. It's a fun movie. It's
They'll get another, like, it'll come back. All of this stuff happens in waves. You know, like, we had the big sci-fi wave for a while where all the, you know, we had the Matrix and Fifth Element and, you know.
But that's the thing. I feel like
every poster was blue and orange.
Yeah.
But if you look at the 70s onward, the movies have only gotten larger. There's that scale back hasn't really happened, right? You had 2001 and Star Wars, and then you had Aliens and Terminator.
But eventually,
you left out Jaws, man. That was the first blockbuster.
There you go. I mean,
you can't really go after a certain point.
Scale, though,
after a certain point, how can you go bigger though? Like once you get to like the multiverse dying, then that's pretty much as far as you can go. I think
I agree with you from that standpoint, but you know, there's always just the more explosions, bigger explosions, more superpowers, bigger creatures.
Bad Boys 3.
You know, like,
more explosions.
Right? Like, that's just kind of how it seems to look. And, like, I think Jaws being a blockbuster is an interesting point because, again, it's a small-scale film. It's one shark affecting one island.
Yeah.
Right? If they just let the shark go and abandon the island, okay, those are the consequences.
What if he keeps growing?
Right? He just gets bigger.
Eventually, he goes after the giant space turtle
He frees all the smart sharks from Deep Blue Sea.
Right.
And
wow, guys.
Yeah, and then Sharknado starts.
It's the Sharkverse.
Yeah. Rachel's into this, I can tell.
But even you look at the Jaws movies, though, and they go off the rails after the first film.
They do.
You know? Like, Jaws the Revenge. I think it is Ebert who has this, and I hated this movie is the book, right? And he makes a comment about how, you know, it's who couldn't love a movie about a shark who's attacking the descendants of the people who killed it, right? Because it's supposed to be the original shark that blows up in the first film. Like, that makes no sense. But they had to up the ante and keep increasing the ridiculousness.
Yeah.
You know, even something like the Chucky franchise.
Or Die Hard.
Die Hard, yeah. Right. He starts as like this, you know, New York cop who's going to save some people in the building too.
I'm a terrorist, yeah. And
he's
then
got superpowers by the end of Chernobyl.
He can sling motorcycles at helicopters, and yeah,
like that just seems to be like any franchise that lives long enough jumps the shark, right?
So to speak,
nukes the fridge.
Yeah, Indiana Jones. That's a great example, right? Like, he starts wanting to save some relics, and next thing you know, he gets nuked in a refrigerator.
Now, Star Wars has stayed pretty consistent. You have a planet exploding star throughout like three different times, you know, and it doesn't really get more powerful. It's
The sphere has gotten larger all three times.
It's true.
Sphere is bigger,
but it isn't any more powerful, really. I guess it did get a little more powerful in seven, but whatever.
My God.
Oh man, but I don't know. I like the more grounded, smaller stuff. Right. Because like this movie, they didn't have the special effects that we have now, but everything's fairly grounded. Like I can't think of anything other than the way the cave kind of crumbles conveniently at the end. Everything else could happen fairly easily.
Yeah.
Right. Like most of these things are just like rope driven traps that are fairly stereotypical cinema traps that you'd see in an Indiana Jones movie. You know, and there's a boat,
right?
You know, nothing's like super
outrageous.
It's
a ship.
Yeah. A ship.
Not a boat.
They're the same thing.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Don't tell that to a boat owner or a ship owner.
To a boater.
A ship owner would not be happy if you called a ship a boat.
Okay.
Just saying.
What else?
I
think we covered more than enough.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. We really talked about the Goonies, man.
Well, only for about a third of the conversation.
It did go off the rails a little bit. Okay, at the end, I really like the movie. The kids are great. The kids are a lot of fun. I think that was a fun cast to watch, and it's almost a shame that there isn't more of them together doing that type of thing. And
it reminds me of why I hate child actors, because these guys were great.
Oh.
And like nowadays, like when we saw the Jungle Book, and I was so bothered by Mowgli, I did not buy any of his performance at all. And this performance blows out of the water. Maybe they had an easier job on this one, but
well, think about it. These kids were together in these sets that really looked like caves. Versus, and I'm forgetting the kids
who played
Mowgli,
CGI,
it's
everything.
A giant green screen room, with guys wearing weird suits with little dots all over them and head cams. Like that's hard to do. Like even you look at an actor like Sir Ian McKellen. Right, who's one of the greatest actors of all time, especially on stage. The man broke down during filming on The Hobbit because he couldn't stand acting to tennis balls. He wants to act to people. And maybe that's the point, that it is just, it's better. It's more real. It's more true to act to other people, to act to other things.
Yeah.
That's all.
I agree.
All right, guys, so that's going to wrap our discussion on the Goonies. Of course, you can join us every Tuesday night for movie discussions. And next week, because I just peeked at our schedule and
Good job. Is
not time sensitive, we're going to talk the Cornetto trilogy
week. How are we going to watch all three of those, rewatch all those before next week?
I already did. So
you got this. You want to borrow?
No.
You got this.
I don't want to do it next week because that's a lot of movies to watch. Can we do Mystery Men instead?
Okay. Yeah. We'll review or discuss Mystery Men next week.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
Have you seen it, Derek?
Yes.
Okay. We've all seen it.
It's been a very long time.
Okay.
We're doing Cornetto trilogy before the fall's over.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I just want more than 1 week to watch those three movies. It's going to take me several days to get through The World's End or whatever that movie's called.
Several days.
Yes, because I have
to. It is like less than 2 hours long.
I know,
this.
But that's because I can only take like 45 minutes of that crap at once.
Oh my God. It is not crap. It's so good.
We'll get to that. So Mystery Men next week. If you haven't seen Mystery Men, go watch that. We will be discussing it in all of its spoilers.
I'll probably be comparing it a lot to The Boys, so you should watch that too.
We'll see how much we can get through.
Watch all superhero satire made in the last 20
also
years.
Also, Doom Patrol and Watchmen. If you could just watch all
Kick-Ass,
yeah, please. Yeah. Just
which we've already discussed.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
So you can join us every Tuesday night on twitch.tv/heroespodcast to be part of the discussion. About movies and TV and superheroes.
I didn't know where
wasn't
that was
it?
Going.
I totally spaced and I landed it. It was a Leonardo DiCaprio moment. Thank you. You can follow Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. You can follow Heroes Podcast at heroespodcast.com or Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heroes Podcast. You can also follow Ryan at Buster Props. On multiple platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can follow the Star Trek dude, Derek, at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can follow myself at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And that is it, guys. I nailed this landing. Let's be done before I mess it up.
Too late. Oh, she just went off the rails at the end.
Bye, guys. See the wipe?
I did. Yeah. So fancy.
George Lucas thing all over this.
Yeah. Well, can we add a lens flare next time and go J.J. Abrams instead?
I think we should put in small Easter eggs and spoil the plot.
Michael Bay. Oh, God. We'll just have a different director every time.
I like it. I like it.
At the end, it turned out we're all dead.
We'll just have some for a like rolling episode. I like it.